So I'm going to talk about chiral superconductors. And these are superconductors where the Cooper pairs have an angular momentum. Oh, there, that's good. So they break time reversal symmetry and parity. And much of the interest in this area, of course, is because these superconductors can be topological and support Majorana fermions, where this depends not only on the nature of the superconductivity, but also on the topology of the Fermi surface. And a key goal in this area is realizing chiral superconductors in physical systems, which, of course, requires understanding and detecting the key signatures. So in this, well, so we heard yesterday from Jim Salz that helium-3 is known to support a chiral P-wave superconducting phase. And you can't make such a definitive statement about the electronic analogs of chiral superconductivity in real bulk materials. However, there's a lot of evidence pointing towards chiral P-wave superconductivity in strontium ruthenate. Maybe I should move this to the other side. And there's also a fair amount of evidence in UPT3 pointing to a certain type of chiral F-wave superconductivity. Beyond that, it's mainly proposals, although there are hints in various materials. And for example, in this hexagonal nictide, MuSR has seen broken time reversal symmetry, and there's theory work that suggests that it could be a chiral D-wave. But here I'm going to concentrate on these two materials, trying to compare strontium ruthenate and UPT3, where there's a number of experiments pointing to chiral order. So for this talk, I want to focus on the challenges in detecting and interpreting the signatures of broken time reversal symmetry. And as part of that, I'll highlight some differences between P-wave and higher angular momentum, which could play a role in the differences between UPT3 and strontium ruthenate. Also, we'll see that the microscopics comes in for some of these signatures. And I'll say a little bit about detecting the possible Majorana modes. So first, just a bit on the microscopics of strontium ruthenate. This is a strongly correlated system, highly two-dimensional, tetragonal. There's three sheets of the Fermi surface, one two-dimensional sheet, the gamma band, and two quasi-one-dimensional sheets, the alpha and beta band, fairly strong spin-orbit coupling. This system superconducts at 1.5 Kelvin, and there's several experiments that point towards triplet superconductivity in this material, and also the specific heat strongly suggests that there's comparable superconductivity on all three bands. So recently there's been a number of RG studies that have told us about the gap anisotropy and other properties. These works, you know, they have a lot of common ground and they sort of build on each other. So I'll just mention what's work coming from Steve Simon's group, where they included on-site repulsive interactions as well as the exchange, like the including the Hund's exchange and spin orbit coupling. And they found that three superconducting phases, both P wave and D wave, but you know, from the experiment, so the D wave was at large values of J over U, but from the experiment pointing to a triplet, that leads to the P wave at somewhat smaller values of J over U. They found both a chiral and a helical phase. That's where the two spins have the opposite chirality. So that's a state that doesn't break time reversal. We'll see, you know, there's a number of signatures for time reversal. So the focus is on this chiral P-wave phase, where I just show from this the latest RG study, the pairing form factors for the gaps on the various bands here. The blue here is the sort of what's happened. Blue here is the gamma band. One property that all these RG exchanges or RG calculations share is that they show that there's a really dominant pairing on the next nearest neighbor bond. That is, you know, the gap structure has a large sine cosine factor here that actually dominates over the sine factor, and that gives rise to some of these minima. And that can come in interpreting some of the experiments. So in UPT3, so this is an HCP lattice, so you've got triangular layers that are strongly coupled. It's really three-dimensional. It's got a complicated Fermi surface. There's five sheets to the Fermi surface. But I think one might argue that these two largest Fermi surfaces, which also have large mass, really dominate. So, you know, this could be a two-band superconductor. So as Jim Sahls mentioned yesterday, there's two superconducting transitions here in zero field, the so-called A and B phase, where there's signatures of broken time reversal symmetry in the B phase. And again, there's experiments, at least the NMR, pointing towards triplet, although I would say it's probably not as firm evidence for triplet as it is in strontium ruthenate. But there's a number of experiments that point towards, if you assume it's triplet, there's a number of experiments that point towards this chiral F wave order parameter, where you see the chiral part here is really like a chiral D wave, but where the two components are not degenerate, and that's a reflection of these two order parameters. And the lack of degeneracy there isn't fully understood. There's different ideas of what's causing, might be causing this in UPT3. And I should say, and this is not the only order parameter under consideration, but there does seem to be building experimental evidence for it. So going back to strontium ruthenate and chiral P wave, in a simple one-band model with the cylindrical Fermi surfaces you have in strontium ruthenate, that's a topological state. It has characterized by churn number one, which means there's exactly one chiral edge mode for each mode, well, one chiral edge mode doubly degenerate for spin. And these edge modes give rise to spontaneous ground state currents, which are screened. But the net effect of the spontaneous current and the screening current is that you have a field predicted at the edge of your chiral superconductor. And this is assuming a single domain. If you have multiple domains, you have these running around each domain. And as we also heard, you also get currents running at impurities. So if you calculate these currents in a continuum approximation for a one-band chiral P wave, you know, they're actually give rise to quite large fields. In a realistic model, it'd be reduced, but generically, these fields are very robust and are not zero except under fine tuning, and I'll say more about that later. And this property is a little bit special to chiral P wave, because for example, if you look at chiral D wave with churn number two, or chiral F wave with three of these surface states, and you do exactly the same calculation of Stone and Roy that gave the large current in chiral P wave, you find that the current actually vanishes in that calculation, which is a continuum limit calculation. So it's only chiral P wave that gives the current in the continuum limit. Of course, on a lattice, these higher angular momentum states may give a current. It depends on the symmetry. It depends on the actual angular momentum, the symmetry of the lattice, and the symmetry of the surface that you're looking at. And in particular, relevant for UPT3 is chiral D wave on a triangular lattice typically does have a current, but it's reduced as you would expect since it has to vanish in the continuum limit as you go to low filling. So there's a number of probes that should see these signatures of broken time reversal symmetry. One of these is MuSR, where of course they do see this in strontium ruthenate. I just want to concentrate on the interpretation of these experiments. So this is interpreted as being due to fields at interior domain walls between the two chiralities at plus I and minus I in strontium ruthenate. I mean, other possibilities is there could be fields due to impurities in these clean samples that should be very small. There could be also fields induced by the muon itself. And in fact, although there's unpublished data that has a higher sensitivity, they went over longer time periods. And both of these data, first of all, they agree. They get a noticeably worse fit if they assume that the signal is coming from muons itself. However, this work showed that if you fit it by assuming there are two sources, both random domain walls and the muon itself, up to one-third of the signal could be coming from muons. So it's possible that this is a combination of those two effects. In UPT3, this is going way back in time, Graham Luke's group saw a non-zero mu SR result, somewhat smaller than what you see in strontium ruthenate, which is what you might expect if it had the same source. Whereas just a couple of years later, there was other work that saw a null result. However, this other work, as they explained in their paper, it's much cleaner samples. And so if you know, if you think, you know, if there's more disorder, first of all, you might get something from impurities, but that's probably pretty small. But it also could be that you have domain walls in a more disordered sample and you don't have them in the very clean sample. And I should say the other experiments, like the phase sensitive ones on UPT3, don't see any evidence for domain walls. So these two results could be compatible with each other if, again, this was, you know, primarily coming from domain walls, maybe with some self-muon effect mixed in. Oh, well, actually, I shouldn't, no, I guess there couldn't be any, you know, they aren't seeing a muon effect here. And again, since the whole scale is down, presumably the scale for the self-muon effect is down. And so these are compatible as long as there isn't an observable signal from the muon itself. The polar Kerr effect is another experiment that tests for broken time reversal symmetry. Again, I mainly wanted to concentrate on the interpretation, so it's just that a non-zero Kerr angle is a signal of broken time reversal symmetry that they see in strontium ruthenate. This is Kapitolik's group. Just much more recently, sorry, I guess my last line's cut off here, this is in 2014, same group with Elizabeth Shem, they see a polar Kerr effect that just turns on in the B phase of UPT3, the lower temperature superconducting phase. Actually, it's a very large effect. Notice this is in microradians, where in strontium ruthenate it was in nanoradians, so there's a very substantial, relatively substantial Kerr effect here. So actually understanding the Kerr angle is a little bit complex, and it's been quite controversial in this field of superconductivity. First of all, the Kerr angle is related to the Hall conductivity, and so to have a non-zero spontaneous Hall effect, you need to both break time reversal symmetry and some mirror symmetries. But that's not sufficient. You also have to break, on very general grounds, you have to break translational symmetry. And even breaking all those, you know, two mirror symmetries, time reversal and translational symmetry, does not in itself guarantee that you get a non-zero Hall effect. For example, Gorio and others showed that the lowest order Born scattering diagram from impurities is zero for a chiral P wave. However, Gorio identified the skew scattering diagrams as giving a contribution for chiral P wave. The same contribution actually vanishes for any higher angular momentum. And there's also higher order terms where you actually have to break particle hole symmetry in addition to having a higher order disorder. As far as looking for intrinsic effects, we showed in lowest order that there's an intrinsic contribution. Well, first of all, the intrinsic contribution in low order vanishes for a chiral, for a single band chiral superconductor. There's a multi-band contribution, but only if there's interband pairing. And so depending on your systems and the models that you use, this may be small. But this, you know, so these are possible explanations of what's going on in strontium ruthenate and possibly UPT3. And at this point in time, we don't have further information as to which one, if either of these, is a description of the actual experiment. Sorry, this line's getting cut off, because this is actually a reference to work by Jim Sauls that was work done, sorry about that, that was done for in relation to helium-3, where he broke the symmetry, the translational symmetry along the Z direction by explicitly considering the surface, and then brought in one of the flapping collective modes that propagates along the Z direction, and found a non-zero, and also breaking particle hole symmetry, one finds a contribution that is relevant for helium-3. You know, since it involves the L vector tilting out of the AB planes, you know, I don't expect it to play a role in strontium ruthenate, which is such an anisotropic material, but it could play a role in UPT3. And of course, this calculation is for a P wave, and as you see, there's quite subtle cancellations here with higher harmonics, so it'd be interesting to try and identify the analogous contribution that might be appropriate for UPT3. So again, at this point in time, you know, we don't have a direct connection between theory and experiment with the Kerr effect. There's also been numerous attempts to just try and see these edge currents more directly by scanning a squid over the surface of your of strontium ruthenate, where you should see effects at the edges and also through any domain walls that intersect the AB face. And this started in 2005 with work by Catherine Moeller. Here I'm just sort of showing some of the more recent contributions. Again, I'm sorry, I don't know why. The display is cutting off here, but this is work from 2014, and in each case, you know, they're increasing the sensitivity, looking at smaller samples, so there's less room for domains, and they keep squeezing, all of these are null results, they keep squeezing the bound on the size of these edge currents, such that, you know, the bound now is that they're in the milligauss range. And so this is a fairly large and substantial, you know, contradiction with the theory of chiral P wave. As far as I know, there have not been any searches for these currents in UPT3, and that would be quite interesting, although they're somewhat reduced in size. On the other hand, if you don't have any domains and that, it should be a very straightforward thing, so that would certainly be interesting. Just as the experimentalists have been working over the years to put stiffer and stiffer bounds on these edge currents, the theorists have also been working over the years trying to get the chiral P wave predicted current lower and lower. And there's a lot of things that can contribute to lowering this current. The trouble is that you need orders of magnitude. And essentially, these effects, which are basically playing with your boundary condition, or else playing, you know, with more general band structures and pairing potentials, they tend to give order one effects unless you fine tune. And we heard from Jim Sauls that if you had a perfectly retroflective surface, you can get zero current. But if your surface is only half retroflective, you know, you get roughly half the current, which isn't getting you very far to three orders of magnitude. So I guess at this point in time, this is not resolved. I mean, it's not out of the question that a whole number of order one effects and something fairly close to fine tuning could bring us to that, or just below that experimental limit. Of course, you run the risk that the experimentalists will just put even stiffer bounds on it. If these currents are really zero, that's actually a real puzzle for chiral P wave, which wouldn't be as much of a puzzle in with some higher angular momentum pairings. Also, I should point out that keep in mind the explanation for the mu SR is in terms of domain wall currents, which are directly related to the edge currents. And so that's another problem of trying to reconcile the experiments together. Also, phase-sensitive measurements, of course, can tell you about the complex nature of your order parameter, that I, which is the signature of the broken time reversal symmetry. On strontium ruthenate, these are a little bit complicated. Van Harlingen's group has done Josephson junctions on the AC surface here of strontium ruthenate. And rather than seeing just a simple Fraunhofer pattern, they see a fairly complex patterns, of which this is just one example of. And subsequently, Segrist showed that one could reproduce patterns like this if you assumed that there were sufficiently small domains. Actually, they have to be dynamic, since some of these features are dynamic, that are intersecting the surface at oblique angles if you also include anisotropic band structure. So that's a somewhat indirect signal because of all the ingredients that go in. You might think a more direct test would be to do a corner junction here, because that corner would be directly probing the plus and minus I. And that was done by Ying Liu's group, where they actually, if you have S wave, you expect a maximum at H equals zero, a minimum for D wave, and for this chiral P wave, you should get something that's in between. And actually, they saw exactly that in one junction. Unfortunately, they were not able to make a second junction that displayed this effect. That might be explainable in terms of domain walls. However, I mentioned that Ying Liu also did tunneling straight across her sample from one AC face to the other one, and that was a measurement that confirmed odd orbital pairing. So that's strong evidence for triplet pairing, and that was not, that result was not cluttered by the effect of domain walls, which would certainly have made that very difficult, especially small ones. On UPT3, again, the reference here is getting cut off. This is Dale Van Harlingen's group more recently, where they did the corner junction on UPT3, and it's consistent with D wave. Now, to really get at that I, you'd see a very similar thing for just dx squared minus y squared, you'd like to actually do this as a function of angle. And for that, I just mentioned that Ronnie Tamali gave a talk here last week where he talked about the characteristics in the DIDV curves for complex order parameters, pointing out that you get an, if you could do tunneling as a function of angle, you get a lot of characteristic features at sub-gap energies that distinguish this from just a single component unconventional pairing. So those are really the type of experiments we'd love to see on both of these materials. We don't have that, and in strontium-ruthenate, we have nice C-axis tunneling. This is by Seamus Davis's group in collaboration that also involved Stanford, 2013, I believe. Is it? Yeah, things are getting cut off. So what we learned, this doesn't probe the eye, but what this measurement showed us is that there's substantial superconductivity on the alpha and beta bands, because the gamma band has almost no dispersion in the C-axis, and they're tunneling into the C-axis. And also this V-shape is consistent with having these deep nodes that the RG is predicting, the so-called near nodes. On UPT3, there's this beautiful tunneling experiment that involves Seamus Davis again, Van Harlingen, Bill Halperin, and others here. So this is a UPT3 crystal where they've got these tunnel junctions all set out at different angles in the AB plane. Here, they're not measuring DIDV, they're measuring the critical current as a function of temperature, and they see noticeably different behavior in the A phase, the first superconducting transition at 45 degrees, and they track this as they go lower in temperature. And basically, this is showing what comes out of modeling or calculation, where you just assume that you have this chiral F wave gap function with two temperature dependent gaps here for the two components of the order parameter, and it captures the key features of the IC characteristics. So that's, I would say this experiment is compatible with this type of order. In particular, they're picking up this fourfold broken symmetry in the higher temperature superconducting phase. There's not a lot to report on the search for Majorana fermions. in these materials. Like I said, I have nothing to report on that in UPT3, but in strontium ruthenate, there was this one tunneling work where these are planar tunnel junctions, and they're just metal to superconductor. But they did, they're pointing out that they see this very broad zero bias conductance peak, whereas the same technique applied to the cuprates with a 1-1 surface that's pair breaking, you see a sharper zero bias conductance peak. And so this very broad conductance peak is what you expect for these chiral edge modes that fill in your entire gap, unlike a typical Andreev bound state. So in that way, you know, it's looking like a signature of the chiral edge mode. I just point out that, you know, one caution here, these dips, which are a signature according to the theory of the superconducting gap, are seen at 0.93 millielectron volts, which is a very large energy for a 1.5 Kelvin superconductor. It put 2 delta over TC of the order of 13 or 14. So I think one would really like to see this type of experiment repeated with an insulating barrier to give you a clearer signature of the density of states. So Manfred in his talk just talked about Boudakian's experiments on these nanocrystals as evidence for half quantum vortices. You know, that's somewhat tied to the search for Majorana modes. Well, first I should say that if he in fact is seeing signatures of half quantum vortices, this is strong evidence for a triplet superconductor because this is a topologically stable state if you have equal spin pairing in a triplet superconductor. So as I say, there's a number of experiments in strontium ruthenate that are pointing to triplet. And if these are half quantum vortices, what's special about that is at this edge here, you should have a single Majorana mode. That is, you know, it's not no more degenerate for the two spins because this is a vortex and just one of the spin components. Your other Majorana mode would be at the outer edge here. And of course, that's the setup that the Majorana fermion people, the quantum computing community really wants, is an isolated Majorana fermion. So of course it would be great to see this experiment confirmed, and as Manfred mentioned, Ying Liu is working on that. My communication with him says that he's actually seen what he thinks is the signature of a half quantum vortex in one sample that he's made, but they're working very hard to try and see this in other samples because most samples that they manufacture do not show that behavior. So I'll just end by saying, I think it's quite likely that one or both of these materials, UPT3 and strontium ruthenate, are chiral superconductors, and I think, you know, unambiguously determining that would be a very important step in understanding chiral superconductivity. And of course, to get to that, there's a number of challenges in the way. In particular, what I've highlighted is really how to understand and reconcile the various signatures for broken time reversal symmetry. And I think in this regard, it would be really useful and important if we had this sort of angle resolved tunneling data that could give us key insight on exactly, you know, whether we are near, tuning or something somehow with the anisotropic gap structure. And also, of course, one would like to see the search for surface currents in UPT3. I think that would also help tie the theory and experiment together. Of course, there's huge challenges in trying to detect these Majorana modes, if it is a chiral P wave, and if they do exist, that is, if you've got the conditions for topological protection, which you may still have, even though there's lots of low-lying excitations, although it's not guaranteed. But even if you do have them, of course, it's very challenging seeing these with all the low-lying excitations and some of the signatures that you would have liked to look for, like the quantized thermal hull conductivity, doesn't seem possible, or at least it hasn't been possible in strontium ruthenate because there's such a large longitudinal thermal conductivity from all the low-lying excitations. And of course, the bigger goal in this field is to discover other chiral superconductors. So I'll end there. Thank you.
So Catherine, could you repeat in some more detail why you believe that the edge currents for higher chiral superconductors should vanish? Because naively, it's not that intuitive, because a higher churn number should just not be more or less stable than a lower churn number in principle.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if I, you know, I don't really have a physical explanation for that. I mean, it certainly, it comes out of, you know, you can calculate it in a whole variety of ways, and perhaps the simplest is in Ginzburg-Landau theory, where you're calculating the coefficient of the gradient terms that actually give rise to the current, and you know that it simply involves you know the Fermi velocities Vx and Vy multiplied by the two pairing amplitudes delta x and delta y star or delta one delta two star, and of course in the continuum limit, you know, those Vx, Vy, you can just, you know, you're doing an integral of the Fermi surface, you can just transform those to cos theta, sine theta, and right away you've got to match it with cos theta, sine theta, anything higher will just give you zero. You know, so, more physically, you know, maybe it has something to do with, you know, the fact that the current is a vector and P, the P wave order parameters form a vector, whereas the higher ones don't. You know, but as I say, you know, that is, in, you know, you have to be careful. That is in the continuum limit, and you know, you put these things on real lattices. It's sort of interesting. You know, what we find is, you know, that the currents on a real lattice, where you move away, you may even get to Van Hove singularities in that. They tend to only vanish when you consider a higher harmonic chiral state that is not actually a two-dimensional degenerate representation. Like if you put chiral D wave on a square lattice by just somehow tuning your parameters or something on along the high symmetry directions of the surface, you get zero, whereas you put it on a triangular lattice and you get non-zero. But I think the takeaway is that, you know, you do expect to get less current for the higher harmonics, and I stress that just because, you know, there's all this evidence pointing towards chiral P wave in strontium ruthenate, and it is a problem getting rid of that current.
So just to comment on the mu SR results in uranium platinum
three, right,
that you referred to by Grand Luke and Fluke's okay group in Grenoble.
Right.
It is known that disorder will give you larger field fluctuations in the background chiral phase.
Right. So, although, you know, as long as your sample is pretty clean, that should be a small effect.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to get to. Is that the cleanliness issue is not necessarily impurity disorder. So there was a study done on uranium platinum 3, systematic annealing studies, and then TEM measurements, and they found this was done by the Northwestern group on a series of samples, and they tracked the TC suppression due to disorder, and it doesn't, and also did chemical assays. There's virtually no impurities at all in the system. It's dislocation loops. So they measured the density of dislocation loops as a function of annealing, and that tracks perfectly with the TC suppression.
I see.
So you don't need
and you don't need domain walls to see that signature, right? Yeah.
So Catherine, the edge current for higher angular momentum channels in continuum, are they vanishing identically, like zero or?
No, you know the Stone and Roy calculation, and they are exactly zero in that Stone and Roy calculation, which is an analytic solution to the BDG equations in the continuum limit. That's not self-consistent, although interestingly, self-consistency doesn't really seem to matter. But I get, you know, there are some effects that aren't included in there. You know, there are Fredel oscillations that don't give you a any net current if you integrate over it, but they do give you an oscillating current, and so there's there are little things like that in the continuum limit.
That Stone and Roy calculation for say a disk, right? That gives you edge current. It directly connects to the vortex bound state spectra. So then my question is, for higher angular momentum channel, if you look at the vortex bound state spectra, do you get zero energy bound state? You do.
Yeah, I don't think. Because yes, keep in mind, you do get these edge states, so there isn't any problem getting, the chiral edge states with the zero modes in, that comes out of the, generalization of Stone and Roy to higher angular momentum. So it's not that there aren't states, it's just that, there's an exact cancellation. In fact, an exact cancellation in the current not only carried by the states, 2, 3, 4, but also carried by the bulk. Those two separately vanish in the higher angular momentum. So there's just, obviously there's a lot of symmetry there, which as I said, in Ginzburg-Landau, you can see very simply.
So a question for Catherine, but also for Jim. I want to drag Jim into this discussion as well. So instead of searching for the currents at the surfaces of these crystals, I mean, would it be productive at all to turn our attention to searching for intrinsic angular momentum in these compounds?
Although they're sort of related, but of course, the intrinsic angular momentum in this case is very small compared to helium-3 because you have screening currents, right? So that's, the amazing huge angular momentum that you have in helium-3, there's no screening there. So that's your unscreened surface current, and it's giving, in Stroheim-Ruthven or UPT-3, it'd be giving you, tens or hundreds of Gauss in the center of your sample, if it wasn't screened. I guess.
But clearly, searching for the currents doesn't work, so I'm trying to find out if there's an alternative within.
Well, there's a little bit of angular momentum, again, just, for the reason that there's still field at the surface, but I don't know, I would have thought it's a lot more difficult. I mean, you're an experimentalist, isn't it more difficult to measure a smaller angular momentum than measure something that should be at least a Gauss or so?
You really want to measure a mass current? Okay, well.
Well, you definitely would want one domain. So I think UPT would be your candidate there.
Maybe.
So the machinery for doing gyroscopic experiments now is about 10 to the 4 times better than it was 10.
It won't be recorded unless you have a microphone.
Well, his voice is loud.
No,
thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an interesting proposal, but I don't know whether or not it's really feasible.
I've covered myself there.
So, Catherine, assuming it is a chiral P-wave superconductor, but there are these gapless or near gapless bulk states, what effect does that have on the Majorana modes? Are they still well defined?
For the specific near nodes that are being predicted, that is, if you like line nodes, I'd say, yeah, okay, if you went down to the lowest temperatures, yes, but, at any finite temperature, I guess, yeah, I mean, it does depend a little bit on the model because, you are guaranteed, when I say that these modes here, these chiral edge states are topologically protected. There's three features that are topologically protected. One, that it passes through exactly zero energy, and that it joins your upper BDG band to your lower BDG band. It depends on the details exactly where it joins your upper BDG band to your lower BDG band. So you could have near nodes and still have a fairly robust spectrum there, which should show up in some signatures, but it's obviously very complicated, you know, to see that. On the other hand, you see what I'm getting at. I mean, if your Majorana mode just comes from your near node to your, you know, whole near node, you know, there isn't, but it still, it has to be there. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think that it does depend on the details, and I actually think after Simon's work that it probably, you know, those details probably really depend on a three-band model, because after all, it's the gamma band that's really imparting the topological protection, and it's not going to allow that Majorana mode, you know, that zero and that to mix with anything else, right? I think you have to do a realistic three-band model.
Catherine, a question about the relative size of the Kerr effect in UPT3 and astronomy resonate. Does the fact that it's so much bigger in UPT3 have something to do with the effective mass? Should we take that seriously? And if so, can we rule out some of the various mechanisms for generating a Kerr effect?
Yeah, so I guess, the index of refraction n comes in there. So I don't know what, how that compares. There probably is quite a difference between UPT3 and strontium ruthenate. I don't know, does anyone offhand know those optical constants? So as far as I know, there is no calculation of the Kerr effect for UPT3 or even for the chiral F wave order parameter that's being proposed. I can't say whether that makes yes, the difference in magnitude could be attributed possibly to the index of refraction. It's just I'm not sure.
So do I understand it correctly that none of the supposedly chiral superconductors' Kerr measurement can be understood theoretically? They all show Kerr signal, and we just don't have any idea. They shouldn't be giving the signal?
Obviously what we'd like the experimentalists to do, they should do the Kerr signal as a function of disorder. Right, that would tell us right away, is it intrinsic or not? That would seem like pretty important information. But I guess the idea of repeating these measurements on purposely disordering your beautiful samples, I don't know.
We do understand how a piece of magnet will give Kerr signal, right?
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, even that can be complicated, but yes. Uh-huh. Why don't we? Well.
In this case, it seems to be all the calculations that one tries give you this vicious cancellations and predict zero.
Well, but actually you want those. I mean, these are small effects, right? And by symmetry, you expect to, you often have to bring in Parker-Hole asymmetry and, which is bringing in another factor of delta over EF. And of course, I guess if theorists could have what they wanted, they would want the Kerr effect at much, much lower frequencies. I mean, I guess I didn't emphasize this. These Kerr effect measurements are done at 1 electron volt. That is not where you'd expect to probe your chiral superconductor. Interestingly, the theories do predict something out there, you're bringing in both the real and imaginary part of something that's happening at lower frequencies, so it's not going to be zero. But yes, I think if we had these at lower frequency, I think then it would, you know, we could settle this question very quickly, but that's a matter of equipment. You know, there's, you know, these are designed experiments that, you know, use a bunch of, you know, optical properties that operate at that frequency.
Yeah, since we start talking about Kerr effect, you mentioned skew scattering, and a few minutes ago you also mentioned particle hole anisotropy. Is it at least known from theory perspective what is more important? We know there is a skew scattering diagram, and also there are contributions gained from impurities, but due to particles.
You mean as far as the size?
Yeah, as far as the size, yeah.
You know, if you're comparing contributions that are coming from disorder, yes, you know, this skew scattering contribution in strontium-ruthenate is much larger than it's, you know, because, you know, for a chiral P wave, the lowest order Born cancels. That probably, you know, that may have well dominated even with particle hole asymmetry, but it doesn't come in. So yes, if you're looking at impurity effects, the skew scattering definitely dominates.
Can I comment on Andre's question?
Yes, please go ahead.
So that last reference there where you can see
it. This one? Sorry.
So that's a paper, it's actually not on helium-3, it was on a one-band model for superconductors. Mm-hmm. And so there the selection rules are, Andre, are worked out for when you can see the sigma x, when you get a sigma xy for an unconventional superconductor for electromagnetic wave reflecting off the surface. And one of the requirements, one of the selection rules is that you have to break particle hole symmetry. So it's a requirement that it be broken. And impurities can do that. So in the particular paper that Sunket and I worked out, the mechanism for generating the currents that would give you the Kerr effect is that the electromagnetic field driving a collective excitation of the Cooper pairs. So exciting out of the ground state collective vibration of the Cooper pairs, and that vibration carried current and gave you the Kerr signal.
So on that, I would just comment, of course, that is a one-band model. You know, in a multi-band model, you don't absolutely have to break particle symmetry, but only if you have interband pairing, which itself, you know, may be smaller than the particle hole asymmetry.
Isn't this guru stuff with skew scattering claims that the result is non-zero even if you have particle hole symmetry?
Yes, yeah, but you know, Jim doesn't disagree with that, right? He's saying if in the clean case, one band model, you must break particle hole symmetry. Or well, in some ways, okay, this
the impurities
I guess what
themselves
you're saying is,
break a
yes,
particle hole symmetry
yeah,
unless
yeah, they
you're
do
in the
job.
Unitary limit.
Yes, as do, you know, these, you know, I mean, the point is you have to have two different vertices is basically what you have to have, you know. So that's why, you know, that's why it's this diagram with a completely different vertex on the other end.
Uranium, ruthenium-2, silicon-2, is the evidence for chiral superconductivity compelling?
Yeah, I don't, maybe someone else knows more about that. What do I see you, do you want to comment on that, Seamus?
Maybe, yes or maybe.
So in uranium ruthenium to silicon two, we have recently observed the giant Nernst effect above TC, which may be coming from the fact that we have actually time reversal symmetry breaking in the superconducting state that can actually have the so-called very phase fluctuations above TC. That's one of the evidence.
What Jim was referring to is there is Kerr data on URS, which seems to indicate that there's a chiral state there. But
the Stanford group is very careful and doesn't want to publish things until they've eliminated all possible issues. So I think we'll have to wait till they go public.
Anybody else? Okay, well, let's reconvene at 4 o'clock and thank Catherine.